Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival for Wednesday, the 21st day of June, year of our Lord, 2017. Melody will not be joining us today. She's tangled up shipping orders to people, getting caught up on some shipping. I'll be handling the program by myself, at least in the second and third segment. Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com will be joining me in just a moment. First, let's do the market reports, see what's happened in the markets. Gold is up $3.60 to $1,247.20 per ounce. Silver is down 2 cents to $16.52 per ounce. Platinum is up $7 to $9.32. Palladium is up 11 to $8.93. U.S. dollar index is down 0.19 to 97.55. Crude oil is down almost a dollar. It's down 0.97 to $42.54 per barrel. Dow Jones is down almost 60 points to 21,407. NASDAQ is up 44 points to 6,232. New York Stock Exchange is down 44 to 11,695. Standard & Poor's is down a dollar 1.75 to 2,436. I'm going to bring Wendy Wilson on now again from thepowerherbs.com. Hello, Wendy. How are you doing?
I'm doing, Al. Good to be with you.
Good to have you on the program again. What you got for us this week?
Oh, I thought we'd talk about some of these healthcare prerequisites that the World Health Organization is talking about. Of course, you know, we've got the Affordable Care Act here in the United States, and other parts of the world have socialized healthcare. So this is a global thing. In 2009, the WHO actually published their global healthcare prerequisites to highlight the milestones the healthcare industry has accomplished and also their future goals. And this was an international conference that it was called the Health Promotion Conference that met in Ottawa, and they marked out the global plan for health for all. And in the meeting, they went over a lot of the what they refer to as their World Health Organization targets. So we're going to take a look at this health directive and see where this may lead. They had this list, though, Al. It was a global conference, and they referred to their opening list of their prerequisites for world health. And it kind of read like a globalist wish list for utopia. And the WHO insists that in order to promote health, this list will, quote, enable people to increase control over their improve their health. So they're looking at it, they're promoting it, this is good for you.
And they're here to help us.
That's right. And they also state that health is not an objective. They say it's a resource. And I have to ask, well, in what way do they consider health a resource? Is it because healthy people are more productive, or do they refer to the ability to gain wealth, power, and control over people through healthcare directives? So that's my question. And they also go on to explain that individual health is really a social concept and a social resource. They say health promotion goes beyond the individual. It goes beyond your lifestyle, and it even goes beyond your well-being, Al. And it suggests that each person has such an impact on our communities and society and the world that it really has to be a controlled thing somehow. Your health has to be controlled, Al.
So here, in case I get sick or in case I get too healthy?
Well, there's a question. Well, they also had a prerequisite list that they required for global health, and it was quite ambitious. They said they want world peace, they want shelter for everyone, they want education for everyone, they want to get control of the food, and also they want in control of incomes, as well as a stable ecosystem and sustainable resources for all, and get this, social justice and equality for all. And you and I know that can never be achieved, right?
Yeah, but you can it's one of those jobs you'll go on forever trying to provide social equality and social justice.
Right.
I mean, you'll never be unemployed as long as you're trying to make that happen. But it will create injustice. Is in that name, they will create great injustice.
Right. Well, according to their conference, here's a quote from their meeting. They say political, economical, social, cultural, environmental, behavioral, and biological factors can all favor health and health promotion actions, and it aims at making these conditions harmonious through advocacy for health. Health promotion demands coordinated action by government, health, and social economic sectors, end of quote. So global healthcare system kind of looking to local authorities to help them out, the healthcare industry, the media, to assist them in this conversion of healthcare, and of course your social media as well. So they want to be your advocate. What do you think of that?
I think it stinks from the beginning to the end. These are people that are going to try to engineer my life in ways that will serve interests that are not necessarily mine.
Right. Well, according to their plan, the WHO is creating what they call equal health care for all, and they are identifying differences in health care, and they're crafting steps to remove those differences. So it's being promoted as a plan for everybody, affluent and poor alike. Everybody's going to have the same health care. Everybody's going to pay the same. However, poor people don't have the same funds as affluent, so they actually have no funds. So what does that present? A sliding scale payment, or does it just make health care free? Most likely it means a percentage of everyone's income will be garnished, just like in the UK. They take currently 20% of everybody's income to pay for free health care. So that would mean for the middle class, Al, what would that leave the middle class here in the United States after they pay everything else in a tax? What would that leave them to live on?
Probably not very much. And the English are only paying for health care for the English,
right,
at 20%. They're talking about the wealthy of the world, Europe, the Western world, essentially picking up the healthcare tab for the third world.
Well, less
right? It would impoverish the Western world in order to give equal healthcare to the third world.
Yeah, it would be 30% or less is what everybody would be expected to live on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the WHO realizes people don't just volunteer to give up large chunks of their livelihood, so such a scheme, they admit, would only be achieved through policy, laws, and taxes. However, taking your money will be, you know, presented through the media as a necessary step for individuals that will force them to take responsibility for their health. So part of their plan is that they're calling it this coordinated, organized change. Where did they hear that before, right? So they go on to say that your income and your social policies governing health will all foster greater equality. And what they've also lumped into these policies that will govern your health care to foster the greater good is they're also going to standardize these areas: food, supplements, water, public services like utilities, environmental standards, and also trade on imports and exports. So this is all kind of in the together. And they're also getting rid of some obstacles. They're IDing obstacles. So the plan is promoted as, you know, good for the individual and for all society. So this is priming the pump politically, and also to they tell the politicians this whole thing is going to make your choices easier. It's going to be easier for policymakers. So they're going to make, you know, those that are elected, they're going to make their job easier so they get them to vote for this. There's also this a gigantic push for this socio-ecological health care. So it's being crafted as a global guiding principle for all facets of your life, like you were just saying. So when this happens, healthcare becomes the center of a wheel, and then all these spokes that emerge outward from it, so everything is affected by it. So government, religion, commerce, employment, education, and the resources of the planet.
Well, I don't know. It just sounds, you know, if it was a movie and they were, and I was listening to this, I'd say, this is stupid. this is unbelievable, but I don't doubt for a minute this is absolutely believable, and it's just bizarre and another example of how people in positions of power are unbridled, shameless, in your face, just bound and determined they're going to force this upon the world. We'll see how it goes, but...
Well, here's another quote. It says, "The protection of the natural and built environments and the conversion of natural resources must be addressed in health promotion strategies."
It's this word resource that really bothers me.
Yeah, I know.
Because they are talking about my health as if it were some iron ore up in the Mesabi Range or something like that.
And
we have
commodity.
Yeah, it's a commodity, and it has nothing to do with me. It's something completely separate from me.
Well, what you know that old saying, if you don't have your health, you don't have everything? Well, it's being twisted to mean that if you don't have health care, you don't have anything.
I understand.
So global health care will actually dictate living and working conditions. Every employer is going to have a wellness program. And notice this quote from the conference. They said, health care works through concrete, effective community action, strategies, and implementation. Health care needs to, quote, embrace expanded mandates to support everyone. Expanded mandates. That's what we need, right?
That's we don't have enough mandates as it is right now. We need to expand our mandates. You know, where do these expanded mandates take place? And they're orders for people to essentially provide money to fund this thing. I doubt that they're going to be much in the line of mandates in Asia and Africa. I expect that most of these expanded mandates will be in the Western world.
Look what the mandates with, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, and you know, all these things taken out of your paycheck, right? Where did all that money go? Well, it kind of sounds rosy to some of these people. You know, everybody have health care is so fabulous. But the people that are pushing for global health care, they're not participating themselves in the planned care. So why do they have individual policies themselves? Kind of the throwback from an earlier time. They tell us those plans don't work any longer. So if everyone's attitude towards healthcare must change for the greater good, why are they opting out?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's one of the great condemnations of the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. If you see Congress getting better healthcare than they can get out of Obamacare, it tells you there's something wrong with Obamacare. If it's really good, it'll be good enough for the legislators as well as the great unwashed.
Well, when we standardize healthcare so everyone gets the same care, it reduces it to a substandard care to make it affordable for the masses, and the elite don't want that kind of care for themselves. And this is what tyranny looks like. So the global healthcare agenda is kind of like the equivalent of sending the Death Star as a welcome wagon.
Yeah, that's about right. About right. That's a good analogy.
Well, here's another quote from their meeting. They say healthcare is created to be lived by people within a setting where they learn, work, play, and love. It is a setting created where you are caring for yourself as well as others, ensuring that societal conditions and health are attained by all members. So no longer are you supposed to work hard and worry about your own health and your family. You have to make sure your life choices won't negatively affect and impact everyone else in society. So they are planning on hatching this eventually a community voice kind of thing that impacts everyone. So it's going to dictate a lot of what your personal life is like. And why is that? Well, because these powerful entities are changing how society looks at healthcare. They're brainwashing the masses to think of it as a social investment, an ecological issue. And it's the most comprehensive way to strip people of individualism, their cultural identity, and, of course, freedom. And it is to make living a generic entity, basically. Everybody has the same stuff, the same thing, the same position. And if this plan is successful, treatments such as aerial vaccinations will not only be tolerated, but embraced and demanded.
Yeah, mandated.
Yeah.
That'll be some of their mandates.
Well, let's look at a snapshot. Suppose this movement gets underway and it's taken hold and we have global health care. We have that policy. Let's say that it happens. How is that going to currently change the way we live today? Let's look at it, a little glimpse. Informed consent goes away, as well as students, mm-hmm. female students who are in school and pregnant may be forced to get abortions to remain in school. Also, privacy laws vanish, as well as there's no vaccine exemptions. Also, financing and employment sectors will be tied to healthcare compliance. Housing will be tied to healthcare compliance. Rural lifestyles will be threatened, and childbearing will be determined by passing genetic healthcare testing. Also, mandated euthanasia for seniors out the door at 74.
So they're going to decide who is fit to breed.
Yeah, and live past, mm-hmm. you know, past a good mm-hmm. ripe old age. Well, you know, there's a reason God said, woe unto you politicians and lawyers, right? Because they hold positions that often exploit the people for their own gain.
Yep.
So, but fortunately, The good news is God's given us some valuable options with regard to staying healthy, and that's, of course, of herbs that he's provided here for the service of man and the healing of the nations, and you and I know God can't lie. That's what he said. So if people want to learn more on how they can protect their health without, you know, giving up their freedom, they can give us a call at Apothecary Herbs. We'll send them a free product catalog, and they can see what organ cleansing, immune boosting, and some other things can do for themselves and their families. We offer that professional strength organic whole food formula that you don't find in stores. So give us a call, get a catalog, and of course they can reach out to us at 866-229-3663. 866-229-3663, or they can visit us at thepowerherbs.com. And I hope everybody had a great Father's Day recently. We were very busy with the Father's Day special we had.
Well, that's I'm sure most of the people had a good Father's Day, were fathers, had fathers, whatever. But we still have another minute and a half to go on this segment.
Absolutely. The reward point program is also back at Apothecary Herbs, and of course I encourage people to do sign up for the newsletters. You and Melanie write for the American Survival, and of course the Health Quest goes out as well during the week. So these are free subscriptions with powerful, you know, life empowering information in there. Mm-hmm. People can, you know, protect their assets, protect their health, and I mean those are two lifelines. It's like the ripcord of your parachute. You don't want to be without that.
I agree. You know, you mentioned that this was a global project.
Yeah.
And they wanted this to apply to everyone.
Right.
I was sued by the Attorney General of Texas I was a fiduciary for a trust that rented some tables and chairs to a corporation that manufactured colloidal silver. And they sued us under a law that defined drugs to apply to man or other animals.
Right.
Right. Which means the government presumes the people to be animals. We had people contact us from England and also from Australia, told us that they looked at the relevant laws in England and Australia, and they were also, their definitions of drugs were also based on the presumption that the people are nothing but livestock. This is the same principle that will underscore these global healthcare prerequisites. They intend to raise you folks like livestock. All right.
Well, and keep in mind, your drugs are toxins. That's why you need a prescription for them, and you need to be monitored by a licensed doctor. But toxins work against nutrition. Toxins create weakness, and weakness leads to failure. So keep that in mind.
We'll keep it in mind, Wendy. Thanks very much for the information on global health care prerequisites. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. Give her a call. I'm Alfred Addisk. I'll be back in just a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Here's an article from Gains, Pains, and Capital. The headline is Global Central Banks Just Pulled the Plug on Another Bubble. Last week, the New York Federal Reserve downgraded its economic forecast for the second quarter of 2017 to just 1.9%. Now, Trump has been hoping for 3% and even hoping for 4%, but predicting 3%, the New York Federal Reserve says, nope, you're only going to get 1.9% last week. It goes on and says, even worse, it is now forecasting this week that the 2017 total growth will be a measly 1.5%. That's 1.5%. There is a clear trend here, and it's not up. And wait, it gets worse. The Citi Surprise Index has collapsed to levels not seen since 2011. Last time this index was at these levels, the Federal Reserve was about to launch Operation Twist to provide additional liquidity to the markets. Today, the Fed is about to start withdrawing liquidity from the markets, and not a little. $10 billion per month this quarter, $20 billion per month in the fourth quarter of this year. What's the deal here? The Fed is taking away the punch bowl from the markets. Sure, stocks might hold up relatively well today or tomorrow, but the reality is that the $14 trillion market rig of the past 7 years is ending. Now, there's an interesting implication here. They are saying, they are subscribing to the idea that the markets have been, the primary reason the markets have gone to record highs is because of Federal Reserve policies that have made money available to be injected in the markets to push them higher and higher and higher, because the public generally regards the markets as a reliable indicator of how well the economy is doing. They are alleging in this article, that there has been a $14 trillion spent to rig the markets over the last 7 years. They're saying that's ending. Now, if that's true, if the $14 trillion used to inflate the markets is about to end, it should follow that whatever currency has been expended during the same period for the purpose of suppressing the price of gold and silver is also about to end. If that were true, the prices of gold or silver might be about to jump. I don't mean today or tomorrow, but perhaps before the end of this year, we might see significant increases in the price of gold and silver. The article continues. It says, globally, central banks are going to begin withdrawing stimulus from the system as global credit is already decelerating at a pace not seen since the Great Crisis. When they talk about global credit, credit is a nice word. We would all like to have more credit. I would like to have a higher credit rating and whatever. It's sort of thing. Oh, credit. Yeah, we like credit. But what they mean when they say global credit, they mean global debt creation. And they're saying that global debt creation is already decelerating. In a debt-based monetary system, as I've said a number of times in the last month or 6 weeks, I am drawn to the hypothesis that the government must create more debt to keep the debt-based monetary system functioning. I don't think debt is an option. I think it's a requirement. I think if we don't have more debt, the whole thing is going to collapse. And in any case, Gains, Pains, and Capital, they conclude the article saying that a crash is coming. All right? Now, that doesn't prove anything. Like most of these things, you know, the individual articles don't prove anything. But every one of them is a leaf in the breeze. Every one of them is giving us a clue to what may be coming. And you have to pay attention to it. You have to consider it. Here's something about the Trump effect. This is from Constitution.com. It says the Trump effect smashes 7 stock market records through June alone. And they're talking about, we've set record highs at the Dow and the S&P 500 and so on. And they're attributing this to the Trump effect. They're crediting Donald Trump with causing these record highs in the stock markets. And the article says President Trump's economy continues to swell. When it was announced that Donald had soundly beaten Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election, Wall Street reacted ferociously. At first, a small bevy of doubters threw the market for a 24-hour slip. Then the Trump effect became a reality. Now, the Trump effect became a reality. The Trump effect, yeah, there is one. There is something that can be attributed to Trump. But it's hard to describe it as a reality. Yes, there's been a Trump effect. But calling it a reality is, that doesn't sound correct to me. There's an effect here, but the effect is an appearance. The effect is kind of a fiction. It's kind of a miracle, but it doesn't rise to the level of reality yet, in my opinion. And it goes on, the article, which is pro-Trump, and I don't have an objection to that, but as long as you're telling the truth about it. It says, now as businesses far and wide continue to reinvest in the American worker on American soil, our economy continues to grow. I don't know that businesses are reinvesting. I think what's been happening is up until now, the Federal Reserve and other central banks have been pumping liquidity, currency, into the global economy, and I believe that has helped support these markets. And it's not clear to me that businesses far and wide continue to reinvest in the American work on American soil. I think that's an exaggeration. They go on, they say, well, just look what President Trump has done the last 6 months. They point out that the Dow daily closing stock market averages has risen 17% since the election on November 8th. Now, that's good. Since the inauguration on January 20th, right, a little bit later, not November 8th. November 8th, we've had 17%. Since the inauguration, we had 9%. 9% of that 17% has taken place since the inauguration on January 20th. But what that means is that the Trump effect caused the markets to rise 8% in the first 72 days between the election and the inauguration. In the 109 days since the inauguration, the Trump effect caused another 9% rise. When you do the math and fool around with the numbers a little bit, you can see that the Trump effect caused the markets to jump by 0.11% per day in the first 92 days. In the 119 days since the inauguration, the effect has caused the markets to rise only by 0.75%. I know how hard that is to follow, but what it comes down to is that the numbers they're presenting here indicates that the Trump effect has slowed down by almost a third since Inauguration Day. They go on, they point out Standard & Poor's and NASDAQ have set new all-time records. U.S. stock market gained $2 trillion in wealth since Trump was elected, and they close that sentence with an exclamation point. Hooray, hooray, $2 trillion. But we just did an article yesterday, or maybe it was Monday, but it was yesterday, I think it was yesterday, where Wilbur Morris, the Secretary of Commerce, claimed that Trump had caused a $4 trillion increase in stock market equity. And it's interesting to me that the author of this article for Constitution.com says we had a $2 trillion jump in equity, and Wilbur Morris says, no, it was $4 trillion. And it seems like that's a number, there should be some agreement on this. All right? The sheer magnitude of these records is impressive, but we can't ignore the political climate in which the president is operating. President Trump is facing opposition the likes of which no other commander-in-chief has in our modern era. The constant threat of terrorism, Russian aggression, North Korean thermonuclear warheads streaking through the sky, it's enough to give the toughest cowboy a crying fit. But here we are in June with all of the threats persisting and a record-setting economy. That's just not true. We have records being set in the economic indicators we see in the markets, but I don't think we're saying we have a record-setting economy. I just presented an article where the Federal Reserve, New York Federal Reserve, says we're headed for 1.5% for the year. That's not a record-setting economy. It's just not true to make those statements. And they conclude it's almost as if someone was trying to make America great again. Well, this was a Trump puff piece. It was intended to give Trump credit for things that I don't think he's really entitled to, in the sense that he has made tangible moves that have caused the economy to improve. What we see, what I see at least, is I see it, the Trump effect has less to do with what President Trump has done than it has to do with who he is. I think the reason the markets rose 17% since the Trump election is because, one, Donald Trump is not Barack Obama. I was part of it, and the other part of the reason that the market went up 17% is that Donald Trump is not Hillary Clinton. He's not even a Democrat. The markets have reached record heights in appreciation of who Trump is not. They haven't jumped 17% because of what Trump has done. They've jumped 17% because they, I think, out of a sense of relief that, oh my God, thank God, Hillary was not elected. You know, and they tell us that Trump is facing terrorism, Russian aggression. I don't believe the Russian aggression is a real, and nuclear or North Korean thermonuclear warheads streaking through the sky. That's not happening just yet, and I don't know that it's going to. This is hyped, but they mention terrorism. There's a thought, there's an article from the Free Thought Project, and the headline is, "You're 47 times more likely to be killed by a cop than by an Islamic terrorist." We're 47 times more likely to be killed by a cop than by an Islamic terrorist. This was the ratio in America as of June 7th, 2017. Between January 1st and June 7th of this year, 11 Americans were killed by people classified as Islamic terrorists, while 520 were killed by cops. Well, I'm certainly not here in favor of Islamic terrorists, but I'm not in favor of cops just shooting people indiscriminately either. And when someone says, oh my gosh, we're fighting terrorism, and the terrorists have killed 11, the cops have killed 520, I think you have to look at that a little bit. You have to think about what that means. Got a couple of more articles. Here's Republicans breathe easy after Handel beats Ossoff in Georgia. You've heard about, there was a special congressional election in Georgia near Atlanta held yesterday. Republican won. It was a great test. It was promoted as a test between whether the country was in favor of Trump or they were opposed to Trump. And they spent record amounts of currency on this election. Republican Karen Handel fended off a furious challenge from the Democrats, winning a vacant congressional seat in suburban Atlanta, Georgia. Her victory over Democrat John Ossoff, a 30-year-old documentary filmmaker whose campaign was fueled by more than $23 million. I've heard of report today of $32 million. I don't know what the truth is, but tens of millions of dollars were spent on his campaign, financed by energized liberals who were motivated by their strong opposition to Trump, is likely to quell, according to this article, quell Republican nerves across Washington. Republicans are getting upset. There's so much criticism of Trump. People are afraid that by being associated with the Republican Party, by being associated with Trump, they're less likely to win election in 2 years. It says here, Democrat Ossoff fell short despite Trump's low approval ratings. And we hear reports on a regular basis that Trump's approval ratings have fallen. Now, being suspicious, being inclined to be a little bit suspicious, I wonder. I hear these reports that Trump's approval ratings have been falling, right? But they are reported by mainstream media, and I wonder sometimes. Are these reports of Trump's approval ratings, are they legitimate or are they intentionally diminished? In any case, Tuesday's loss means the Democrats failed to win any of this year's special House elections, putting in doubt whether they can flip enough targeted GOP districts next year to win back the majority in the Congress. Now, could it be that the public's distaste for Democratic thuggery has reached the gag limit? Will Americans continue to vote Republican just to make sure that they don't elect another Democratic candidate? Could it be that Democratic policies advocating Trump's impeachment, Trump's murder, and even physical violence against Trump supporters are backfiring? Could it be that the American people are increasingly unwilling to vote for the party of the thugs? One thing seems increasingly apparent. Violent rhetoric and violent conduct are not winning public office for the Democrats. If all that's true, what's going to happen to the Democratic Party once it realizes that its thuggery is costing them votes and elections? And by thuggery, I'm talking about the physical violence that's taken place at Trump supporter demonstrations, the things Kathy Griffin and one thing and another, and people approve of violence and so on. There's been an overtone of violence coming out of the Democratic Party really for 6-8 months now. And it has been shameless. What's going to happen if the Democratic Party realizes that its thuggery is costing them votes and elections? And the answer to that is at least some moderate or pragmatic members of the Democratic parties will insist that if they want to win any more elections, they must tone down their rhetoric and abandon their propensity for violence. But what about the violent extremists within the Democratic Party? Will they learn to play nice, or will they turn their violent tendencies from Trump to moderate members of the Democratic Party? Moderate Democrats have made a home for violence-prone people in the Democratic Party. They've allowed them to persist without significant reining in of their inclinations to speak about violence. Let's see if the moderate Democrats can now survive in their political home with their violent left-wing psychopaths. If the radical violent wing of the Democratic Party turns its violence loose on moderate Democrats, I will not laugh, but I won't cry either. I think the Democrats have come up and headed their way, and we'll see if they get it in the near future. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231. And the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Give them a call for all your gold and silver coin needs. 1-800-375-4188. There's an article from Western Journalism, and it says, CNN chief says network will recommit to attempt to be independent. This is an interesting article. Because it says something about what's happening in the political realm right now. It doesn't say it expressly, but it implies it. CNN CEO Jeff Bukes came under fire Thursday during a Time Warner shareholders meeting for his network's overt bias against President Donald Trump. David Almassi, vice president for the National Center of Public Policy Research, a conservative think tank, is a shareholder of CNN's parent company, Time Warner. So when the Time Warner had its recent shareholders meeting, David Almassi was there, and this has happened the day after the gunman opened fire on GOP lawmakers in Alexandria, Virginia. And Almassi said he felt compelled as a shareholder to take Time Warner executives to task for CNN's contribution to the increasingly uncivil environment in Washington. That's a polite way of saying it's getting too violent. He said uncivil, but what they mean, increasingly, certainly polarized and perhaps even violent. Mr. Bukes, again, he's the CNN CEO. He said, in fact, this is Mr. Almassi speaking to Mr. Bukes, the CNN CEO. He says, we've urged you many times to make CNN more objective, but CNN bias is apparently worse every year. As shareholders, we are concerned about the reputational risk to our investment in Time Warner, as CNN appears to be a key player in the war against the Trump presidency. Now, CNN CEO Bukes replied, "We will recommit. I'll do it to you now, for an attempt to try to be independent." And that was his response to Almassi's questions. And what they're saying is that they're saying that CNN is prepared to stop beating up on Trump. And they're going to try to be more independent, and I would have said it would have been better if they'd been more objective. And he says they're going to try to be more independent. We'll watch and see, but they're admitting there's a problem, and this is interesting to me, because the mainstream media was unable to win the election for Hillary. And the mainstream media has so far failed to impeach Trump over the firing of former FBI Director Comey or Trump's alleged involvement with Russia's President Putin. The mainstream media has been so far unable to win. Well, they did it. They failed to win the Georgia special election for the Democratic Party, John Ossoff. That was held yesterday. Republicans won, right? And now CNN, one of the MS mainstream media's most virulent antitrust, anti-Trump media outlets, is promising to be more fair and independent in its reports on Trump. This battle is a long ways from being over, but for the moment, Trump appears to be winning against the mainstream media. You know, we've got the elite, we've got the deep state. Somebody is pushing hard to try to remove Trump from office. He scares people in positions of power, people who are not working for your interest and mine. Trump scares them, and they want him gone, right? And they have been using the mainstream media in a way that's shameless. They've been using it like a bullhorn just to hammer away at the public and hammer away at the public and tell them, look, there's something wrong here. Got to get rid of Trump. Got to get rid of Trump. Got to get rid of Trump. And they've been losing. Okay? It's, again, this battle is a long ways from over, but for the moment, Trump seems to be winning against the mainstream media. So I'm wondering, what do you think will happen to the Trump presidency if he succeeds in defeating the mainstream media? There's going to be a time. They've come up with egg on their face. They tried to get him impeached already for Comey and impeached for dealing with the Russians, and they've failed. Now they're trying to go after him for something else, obstruction of justice or whatever. How many more failures are the mainstream media going to endure before people begin to say, wait a second, who needs them? How many more failures are they gonna suffer before everybody starts to follow CNN's lead and say, okay, we're going to have to start being more objective about the news rather than just expressing our political bias? Again, what will happen to the Trump presidency if he succeeds in defeating the mainstream media? He's going to get a big boost out of this. I mean, if Trump manages to survive this and just run him off and run him off and run him off, a lot of people who maybe didn't like Trump up until now are going to sit back and grudgingly respect the man. And what will happen to the mainstream media if Trump proves it to be a toothless tiger? How many defeats can the mainstream media take before everybody says, oh, forget them. They're nobody. All right? They have nothing going. They're just selling cereal and soap. That's all they're doing. Excuse me. I think the mainstream media's reputation is right now in great jeopardy. And it's not as if I'm not the first one to make that observation. And it's been observed for perhaps most of a year. But nevertheless, it's coming to a peak, I think. If the mainstream media does and the elite don't get Trump, if they don't somehow knock him out of office, they're going to be shown to be weaklings. It will be apparent that Trump is winning, and I don't think they can stand that. Let's see what else we've got here. Here's an article from Investors Business Daily. Are states the next too big to fail? I mean, you know, states like Illinois, for example. And it says, in the film Too Big to Fail, then Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke defended a bailout of the country's collapsing banks. He said, if we don't do this now, we won't have an economy on Monday. All right? They were within hours of having some sort of an economic collapse. The article from Investors Business Daily says, don't be surprised if you hear a similar argument in the not-too-distant future. But this time, the bailout targets won't be banks. They'll be states drowning in pension debt. State governments face some $3.8 trillion worth of public pension debt. This is according to Joshua Rao of the Hoover Institution. And those pensions are threatening to take some states down. State bankruptcies are not impossible. They are, when they say state bankruptcies are not impossible, that's true in the sense that nothing's impossible, but for the moment, the states can't declare bankruptcy, as I understand it. The law is, if I understand correctly, is clear. The states can't get out of their debt by declaring bankruptcy. However, they point out that the closest thing to a state bankruptcy is already playing out in Puerto Rico. In May, Puerto Rico filed for bankruptcy under a new federal law established just for the island, right? Prior to that, Puerto Rico could not file bankruptcy. Like a state, they couldn't file for bankruptcy. But the feds passed new laws and say, okay, we're going to let you file for bankruptcy because you're having a bad time. However, the law opens the door for U.S. states to demand similar help. Now, the law is only for Puerto Rico, but it sets an example, a kind of precedent, where, again, they can open the door for U.S. states, say, yay, you got to let us file for bankruptcy, too. Now, what's going to happen to these government pensions if the states are allowed to file for bankruptcy? Pensions are going to be written off. They may have some kind of, substantially. They won't just say, forget it, you're not going to get a dime. But if they're allowed to file for bankruptcy, if the states that are in a bind are allowed to file for bankruptcy, it's certain that the people expecting pensions from the government are going to see a significant reduction in the size of those pensions. Puerto Rico collapsed because of its insurmountable pension debt. That same dysfunction is happening in many states, from New Jersey to Illinois to California to Kentucky. States are feeling the stranglehold of skyrocketing pension debt. Illinois is ground zero for the pension crisis. Illinois is now just one notch away from being rated junk by both Moody's Investors Service and Standard & Poor's Global Ratings. No state has ever been junk rated before. According to Rao, we'd mentioned his name earlier in this section, Illinois has more than $360 billion in pension debt. Right, none of that number by itself, it's what does that mean? I don't know. But they compare that with the state's $28 billion in general obligation bonds. They say when you make the comparison, $360 billion for pension, government pensions, and $28 billion is owed on general obligation bonds. General obligation bonds are what pay for putting in new roads and streets and schools, right? And that's all Illinois owes is $28 billion, according to this, on their general obligation bonds, but they owe $360 billion in pension debt. It means that Illinois owes almost 13 times as much for pension bonds as it does for general obligation bonds, again, that paid for things like schools and roads and whatever. The implication, Illinois is broke. Now, that's not news. People know Illinois is broke, but can they get out of it by filing for bankruptcy? And what are they going to do if they can't file for bankruptcy? Right. They go on, they say states will hit the too-big-to-fail moment when the A rating agencies finally treat unfunded pensions as hard debt. The rating agencies are saying you're near junk because you owe $28 billion. The rating agencies apparently are not considering the pension debt when they calculate how good or bad a particular state's bonds are, whether they're junk, they should be rated junk, or whatever. Again, Illinois has this enormous unfunded pension, which is not yet being considered as hard debt. Unfunded pensions are debts backed by nothing but political promises to pay. There's no reserve fund to make good on those promises. The only way to pay the government employee pensions is to raise taxes on the people of Illinois who still have jobs or property. Question. But if the people are unwilling to support higher taxes, who's going to pay the government pensions? And the answer is nobody. The government employees hoping to receive a fat, unearned pension are in big trouble. They're not going to get their money. They'll get some of it probably before this is done, but they might be lucky to get 10%. I don't believe for a moment they'll get more than 50%. I doubt that they'll even get that. All of this will spur calls for bailouts. States such as New Jersey and California could join Illinois in begging the federal government to intervene. And my observation on that is, oh, sure. Since the idiot Illinois taxpayers won't pay the Illinois government's pension fund obligations, they'll just get the idiot federal taxpayers to fund those pension obligations. If Illinois state employees can't screw over the state employers, or excuse me, the state taxpayers, they'll just screw over the federal taxpayers. Or maybe the federal government, which is already $20 trillion in debt, will borrow enough money from private sources in order to fund the Illinois pension obligations. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to work. The American people will be happy to vote for politicians that stay away from the debt. They won't vote for politicians that advocate taking more debt for irresponsible governments, state governments. It's just not going to happen. The point is that the people with people expecting government pensions in some of these states can just kiss them goodbye. It's not going to happen. They don't have the money. They're not going to have access to the money. And the former government employees are in big trouble. Bailouts are only good for rewarding bad players and bad policies. punish responsible states with sound fiscal policies and thriving business climates by making them pay for states that refuse reform. And the federal intervention that would be big enough to come up with $320 billion for Illinois would permanently damage healthy competition among states for people, jobs, and ideas. We are coming to a moment, and we're gonna have to face some realities around here. We've got a deficit ceiling in Washington. We have an unpayable debt in Illinois and probably California and New Jersey and a handful of other states. This is going to come up, and when it does, there's not going to be a solution. There isn't going to be a magical fix for this. We're not going to be able to get some politicians to just promise we're going to work this all out and kiss our boo-boos and everything's going to be fine. We are on the verge of serious financial problems, and how serious they're going to become remains to be seen. Whether this is going to be one of those domino moments where they knock over one domino, which knocks over two, which knocks over four, and so on, or is it going to be something that we will skate through? It remains to be seen, but it really does look like we're getting closer and closer and closer to a lot of financial trouble. You should buckle up and get ready. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd, the producer. Bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.